Weekends are better when you spend it with us. Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. Goodness me, what a show it has been today as real world events catch us in the middle of our planned show. But what a show it's been. As I said, we had Michael McCarron in the first hour talking about his incredible book, Battle Space of Mind, which explores, would you believe it, plans, actual inventions to control what you think, what you see, and what you hear inside your own head. We went into great detail there. And then Dave Hodges from the Common Sense Show for the first time joined us here on TNT, and he stayed back with us for a second hour as we explored developments coming out of Iran and Israel, with Iran threatening to attack Israel within hours. And the crazy thing about it is, why do you announce that you're going to attack and then attack? So it seems that it allows people to get things in place. That would indicate that innocent people can get out of Dodge, as it were. And we're seeing now that the UK, France, Germany, India, US, even Australia, all issuing travel warnings. Australia rerouting its Qantas flight from London to Perth to go via Singapore to stay out of its space. Turkey has now announced that the US is not allowed near its airspace, and so it goes on and on. And in a moment, I'm going to have a brand new guest for us here, Manish Jha, joining me out of New Delhi in India for the latest developments, because India in the thick of it as well. And we'll get into that information in a moment. As soon as we've got him ready, we'll bring him in. But in the meantime, we've also seen today out of Australia in Sydney, Bondi Junction, an attack has been placed where we've seen stabbing and reports of gunshot fire. Four people reported to have been killed there. Shocking scenario at your Westfield on a Saturday afternoon at Bondi Junction here in Australia. Shocking stories just seem to continue further and further away. It's just absolutely unbelievable what we're seeing right now. And I know that Manish is coming in just a moment. We'll bring him in as soon as I get the okay, that the sound is good. He looks ready to go there. I'm going to read you his bio. Incredible. Thank you. Manish Jha is an accomplished and highly respected journalist with over 20 years experience covering global diplomatic, strategic and geopolitical affairs. His extensive career spans pivotal roles at renowned news outlets, including his current position as executive editor of TV9, which is India's largest news network, some 700 million viewers. Incredible. He's known for his insightful reporting on international conflicts and geopolitics, with a deep understanding of complex global issues, notably providing comprehensive coverage of events such as Russia, Ukraine and Israel-Hamas wars, where you couldn't pick a better time. Manish, welcome to Weekends.
Thank you so much, Jason. It's an honor to be in your show, and no doubt I'm really excited to be with you.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to have you on the show, and your credentials to set you up. And goodness me, what a time that's going on here. I take it you've managed to catch your breath right now and see what's happening with Iran threatening to attack Israel. And India, of course, has issued warnings for its people as well. But what can you tell us is the latest that you're picking up out of India at this stage?
Definitely, Jason. First of all, let me tell to your listener and viewers that in this month of December, I was saying that the big war is coming. And that time, lots of my colleague, even my editor, was saying that we can't see that any war is coming. And so we are going to prepare for the national election. As you know, that the election is going to happen. So, and that time I was saying that no, so big war is coming, and I can see what will be the situation in the Middle East. Unfortunately, now it seems that I was right. You know, no one loves war, especially you and me, but it's going to happen, and it's going to happen any moment. So obviously the government of India is also watching the whole situation, because the lots of Indian, more than 20,000 Indians are also staying in Israel. At the same time, thousands of Indian are in Iran, and we have a very good relation with both sides. So it's a matter of concern not only for government, even for the people of India. And we all know that if something happens, if this will convert into the regional war, then the entire supply chain will be affected. And it's a matter for concern for each and every house in India. Yeah.
You make some very, very good points there with India having friends on both sides of it. In the last hour, when we had Dave Hodges interviewed, and he said, you can no longer pick a side, as it were. You need to keep score of what's going on. You can't just be pro-America or pro-Russia, so to speak, anymore, because there's just too many corrupt movements going on, and this agenda to get us into World War III is quite shocking. Therefore, let me ask just this question: from watching the people on the ground in India, the most populous nation in the world now, more people in India than China. Here's an interesting fact for you. Now, since COVID began, the population of India increased by more than the entire population of Australia and New Zealand combined. So it gives you an idea of what we're dealing with. What would be the feeling perhaps on the street now amongst the regular Indian person as to what's going on with Israel and Iran? Do they take sides, or are they just afraid and just anti-war altogether and are not interested in what's going on?
You rightly mentioned about the population of India. Obviously, we cannot say that it's a proud thing, but yes, we consider it as a human resources. And when we see that what Indians are thinking about the war, it doesn't matter that it is between Russia or Ukraine or Russia versus NATO or Israel versus Hamas or Israel versus Iran. The thing is, India always says that, through the dialogue and diplomacy, we can achieve peace. And this is the only way. No one should take side for the war. Everyone should say something about the peace. And if you see the stand taken by the government of India, or even not only the government of India, even the people of India, in the matter of Russia, Ukraine, they choose the stand that this matter should be resolved through the dialogue, through the negotiation, through the diplomacy, not through the war. But whatever we are watching right now, you rightly mentioned, after COVID, whatever is happening, you may dismiss me as the conspiracy theorist, but the fact is that the military industrial complex is actually very much interested, participated, and they don't like to peace on earth, and that's why everywhere they want to go for war. And that is exactly happening in Russia, Ukraine. That is exactly happening right now in Middle East, and no one knows that where this is going to stop. My apprehension, because for the last 2 years I was in the war zone of Russia, Ukraine, then I visited Israel the next day when this 7th of October terror incident happened. And after that, I was the only one who had chance to visit Gaza. I was during that conflict at the border of Syria, Lebanon. And then right now I'm considering to visit Iran also. Why I'm saying this? We don't feel proud to say ourselves as war correspondent. We want to say that we are peace correspondent, not war correspondent. But the fact is, war is happening, and this big war, if it will start, then there is no stop button. You cannot take any position that you are with whom, you are with whom. The end of the day, the whole humanity is going to affected by this war.
Well, this is it, isn't it? It's so obvious that regular humanity is absolutely disinterested in war. The fact that they can't pick a side, the fact that their government tells them that they have to support something that makes no sense. And if you think about, if you go back, 60 years to, or 50 years to the end of the Vietnam War, and you realize how unpopular that war was with Americans. And all wars seem to be unpopular, except perhaps when 9/11 happened and the US was intent on rushing with the weapons of mass destruction into Iraq. And of course, we had the idea of freedom fries and all this nonsense that went on. And of course, that was a very patriotic scenario. But now we're very, very tired of it. President Donald Trump, who started no new wars, painted a very different picture and showed that you didn't need to do it. So all of a sudden, we're in this new scenario now that it seems that the only ones that want war are the ones that profit from it. And these are the same warmongers. And in a world that you said we want to be peace correspondents and not war correspondents, are also supporting policy that means that there are fewer people. Again, in the last hour, and it's very different, Manish, from where you are in India, of course, as I explained, with population increasing. In the West, we're now seeing the birth rate for the first time ever getting below 1.8, some countries 1.6 people per family. So we're going backwards fast in this scenario. And one wonders if you then follow this madness that they want to create this World War III scenario literally before our eyes, well, that can only wipe out more people. And so what's going on in the world then if the people that are trying to do this, how can they get support when the people that they're getting support from are the ones that are getting wiped out? And so this unusual thing, all of a sudden, you would have to think that very, very quickly, any war that happens is going to be incredibly unpopular with people. And that might be enough for people to finally go, enough is enough. We need a brand new solution. And that's probably going to lead us into the next segment to start talking about the Indian elections. But I was hoping to just get your comments there. Do you feel that this is a general scenario around the world now that all people are just sick of in the most of fighting at all? We can see through it all. It's all fake. We don't even know who to support.
Yeah, you are very right. The problem is we always have to support for the peace, those who are advocating peace. But the thing is, this is our intention, but this is not intention of warmongers. This is not intention of the military industrial complex and all the governments who are basically following the agenda of military industrial complex. This is the problem. You know, once the military industrial complex has started working with the governments, then what people can do? You know, this is the problem. And when they have a control with the mass media, when they have a control over the narrative, there are very few people like you that who can speak about truth, who can speak about the situation. Can you imagine that what is the situation right now in Ukraine? But nobody is talking about this. Can you imagine what was happening that time? You know, the whole world later on started speaking about what happened in Gaza. But I was in Israel. That time, I did a reporting on Israel, that what is the real intention of Israel and when they will start ground operation. I'm telling you, that report, my report, was just before the ground operation was supposed to start it. And with some secret documents, I did my reporting, and then I had enormous kind of pressure. Even they wrote mail to my managing editor and my management that your reporter is actually, you know, is playing in the hand of Hamas. Come on. I was in Tel Aviv. You know, some senior level of government officials basically discussed with me. And then on the basis of fact, I did my reporting. And then they turned me that he is a Hamas supporter. You know, how can you imagine it? And then see what happened, what exactly Israel did. See, the truth is, we all believe, especially the government of Australia, government of India, even though we all people believe, whatever happened on 7th of October, no doubt, it was completely a terror attack. There is no explanation. There should not be any if and but with terror attack. But whatever Israel was doing in Gaza, you know, there is no word. Pardon my English language, because I have a very limited, you know, words in English, because Hindi is my mother tongue. So, but I can say that there is no any specific word what Israel did and then what is happening. So if you see that first the COVID came, then Russia-Ukraine war started, and then Israel and Hamas conflict is going to be as a regional war. And then if this will over, then China-Taiwan will start. So where it is going to stop? Unfortunately, I had a privilege to visit Taiwan, and then I realized that the new war zone is ready for the war. So everywhere we are forced to face the war, and we all know what will be the result.
That's there's a lot to unpack with what you've said there, Manish. And what we need to do is we need to go to our first break. And let me just say that your English is way better than my Hindi, so you've got no problems there whatsoever. There's a lot I want to talk to you about after the break. You know, what's going on, as what you've seen on the ground as a working war correspondent based in India, reporting on the wars. Just before we go to the break, just want to read you a message. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play, so you can easily watch or listen live to us anywhere, anytime. It's available right now to download, keeping you up to speed on today's news talk, TNT.
TNT's Lembit Opik.
The risk of an all-out Middle East war is increasing as the crisis in Gaza grows ever more desperate. This is an interesting story because, first of all, I do agree there's a great volatility in the Middle East now. And secondly, because there's a lot of death. What I disagree with is that it's got worse. Perhaps some of the Western supporters of Benjamin Netanyahu have finally woken up to the fact that whatever you think of the original October the 7th attack in Israel, the response has been disproportionate from the very beginning. The overwhelming majority of people who died in Gaza are innocents, men, women and children who are not combatants and have no intention of being combatants.
Lembit Opik. And today's news talk, TNT. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. My guest this hour, we are privileged to have Manish Jha with me all the way from New Delhi, who is watching what's happening at the moment with Iran and Israel. And Manish, being executive editor at TV9, has also had the opportunity as a war correspondent to get to both Taiwan and Gaza to monitor and report back on what's going on. So Manish, what I was hoping to do is did you explain what you've seen and when you got there and saw what was going on, first of all, in Gaza? When were you sent there and what did you notice that was different to perhaps what you thought other people were believing that was happening?
Obviously, you know, when the 7th October incident happened, and that very next day, I was in Tel Aviv. So first of all, as a journalist, we started our reporting from that very much place where that incident happened, like all the southern side of Israel, the kibbutz, you know, the Beri, Kisufim, and some other kibbutz. These are the colonies where the Hamas people basically butchered all the innocent civilians. It was horrible. You know, for the next 1 or 2 weeks, we were reporting from there. And then I realized that, okay, let's start to show some bigger picture. And then I visited to the north side of Israel. Then I was very much near about the Hezbollah post. And that time I was saying that very soon the Hezbollah will enter in this conflict, which unfortunately happened. And then we visited the Golan Heights, area of Golan Heights. You know that how that area was occupied by Israel from Syria. And then that time IDF started their ground operation. Then we had opportunity to go and see that places. And here the things completely change. You know, whatever was happening in Gaza, you know, whatever we saw through the lenses of camera and the mobile phone, it was just only 20%, 30%, even the 10% of the real situation. You know, how the kids and how the innocent people were dying, and the whole world was just helpless, just watching, you know. Whenever I was doing my reporting, I was talking to experts around the globe during my news program. And, you know, India has a dream to be a permanent member of UNSC. But I was just thinking what the role of UN is actually for this conflict. You know, and then why we are actually a member of even such kind of useless organization, you know, when you are not able to stop, you know, genocide of innocent people, then what is the point to be a member of that kind of organization? And then what is the point to see a dream that we will be a permanent member of UNSC? The point is that the kind of genocide we were witnessing, and it was horrible. Like I can explain you I can still imagine that when we were at the top of the Israel-Gaza border, it was a high hill, and then we were watching that, okay, the IDF tanks are going, and then the Israeli jets are firing, and we were just doing our live show, and completely we were feeling helpless that we cannot do anything. No one was able to do anything, you know. So no doubt, even it was anxiety for the whole world, including India, whatever we witnessed. After that, yes, you rightly mentioned that when I visited last year, I visited Taiwan also. They have apprehension about that the China one day will attack. And whatever experience I have while covering the Russia-Ukraine war and Israel-Hamas war, I can say you with 100% my conviction that China is just watching. China is watching that what will be the outcome of this war, and then China will attack. You know, after that China will take action, and so this is the time when, whether it is United Nations or any member of that United Nations, they should say that stop this war. Otherwise, just be ready for the new war between China and Taiwan. And you know that what will be the result of this.
It's extraordinary when you consider that India in the last generation, in 20 or 30 years, has changed so rapidly. To be in a position, as you said, to seek a position on the UN Security Council as a permanent member. And then you ask this profound question, why even bother to be involved if we can't even make a difference, more or less, with what we're seeing, to be in a position as the world's most populous country to be part of the BRICS network with China, but realizing that China may not be playing necessarily legitimately if it still has an interest. As you said, it's almost a lay down miser. It's going to happen that one way or another they're going to go after Taiwan. And it just seems so trivial in the scheme of things. Why would you even bother in that scenario when the world is on the brink of world war at this particular stage? With this madness going on, it seems that anyone in power in the world today is looking to either take advantage of another country's weakness, as you might argue for China, or just rushing into conflict as a way to trick the general public into voting for them because they believe that war wins elections. I mean, It's almost like the whole world the power of the planet is insane, and I mean it's absolute craziness that we're seeing here, and this is the purpose of what we're talking about. So I guess if we look at where India is right now, and you're in election season, is there a change? Is there a sentiment? Is India going to return Modi, perhaps even with an increased majority? Can you explain what you're seeing right now in these terms? Because India is no longer a small player. India is a major, major player, even if the UN doesn't want to acknowledge it yet.
Yeah, thank you so much for such a generous comment. And yeah, it's true that India is a major player. And, this is a perception that war is actually winning for the election. War is helping to win the election. It may be true for US, it may be true for Russia and some other countries, but you can see in India, everyone is talking that there should not be any war. There should be peace at global level, and still we are in the election mode. And I don't think that the Prime Minister Modi needs any war to win the election. right now. See, India is the biggest democracy. Everyone knows about this, and we are very much proud of it. In the history of our independence, you see, there was only one moment in 1977 when the then Prime Minister of India actually opposed to vacate the seat despite the decision from the Supreme Court of India. But after that, if you see, whatever result happens, every party accepted that result. Every party accepted that mandate. And one thing I am totally agree with Prime Minister of India, that the India is a democracy, not only that we have the constitution. India is a democracy because it is in our DNA. We believe in democracy, you know, and we have a history of democracy. If you go and see the history of Indian civilization, then you will realize that the 2000 years ago, there was democracy in India. So we believe in it. And with this mood and temperament, all the players, either it is ruling party, either it is opposition party, all players are seriously fighting this election. So this is a very huge difference between from the Russia election, from some other parts of the elections. Every party is trying their best, and end of the day, more than 950 million people are going to decide that who will be in the next Prime Minister of India. Yes, of course, there are high chances that Prime Minister Modi will repeat it, but not because that because that he is saying or he is seeking any war. It is going to happen because whenever he is doing his rally, election rally, he is saying that the people of India are going to vote me because of my work, because of my development. And for that, I can invite you, your team, or anyone else that please come visit India. And then you will realize that, yes, there are lots of changes which we have witnessed in last 10, 15, 20 years.
It's something profound to watch, and we're seeing even a development just in the last week, where three major companies have now announced the plans to build something like 780,000 homes or something ridiculous for people working for Apple, because India is now building Apple products such as mobile phones, etc., and now looking to build the cutting edge versions of what's going on. So in terms of technology, India at the forefront. It's just incredible to see this advancement, and at such scale. And here we are in Australia, a big island mass and a tiny population, a lot of our land unusable, but still 26 million versus 1.2 billion people. I just want to ask you, when you said 950 million people will be voting in the upcoming election, can you describe how elections work in India? Is it all done on one particular day? I know that there's some elections in April and there's some in May. Can you tell us the process, how it's going to work?
Yeah, of course. The people of India is going to vote for the new government. Every 5 years, the election election happens, and this time, the Election Commission of India has announced that it will be in seventh phase, because you have to provide all kind of resources for each and every election booth. Polling station. So India has divided. The Election Commission has divided in the seven phases. The few states will be in first phase. Few states will be in second phase. Even within the states, the few parts of the states will be in first phase. Few parts of the state will be in second phase. The whole purpose is that each and every stage, the Election Commission can deploy their old resources so that there will be free and fair election. So it will start from 19th of April, and it will be over on 4th of June, the last phase. And then the next day it will be counting. And after that, we will know that who is going to be the new prime minister. We have a parliamentary democracy. So for the convenience of your viewers, I can say that you can compare like the British election. But of course, because we have 1.2 billion of people and more than 960 million of voters, and everyone, we have everyone above the 18 years of age is entitled to give vote. So the every person has name in their voter list, and election commission ensures actually that this should be your polling station should be near about your home, so that there should not be any inconvenience to go and to vote. So all the preparations are happening. And let me tell you one thing. We, the people of India, basically celebrates election as a big festival, a festival like Christmas, a festival like New Year. So we really enjoy it, you know. And lots of people from abroad are actually visiting India. And we used to say that it's election tourism. You can actually see the real flavor of India during the period of election. So this is the process, and each and every phases, the candidates will go to file nominations, and any person can contest the election. So there is no bar. So and this is how we actually select our member of parliament and the party who has the majority, because it's a total 543 seats. So to form the government, you need 272 seats. Right now, the BJP, the Bharatiya Janata Party, which is the ruling party, is claiming that this time they have a target of getting 370 seats alone. But let's see, because there are lots of experts who don't agree with them. And it happens most of the time that the one party is claiming that they will get so-and-so seat, and then they don't get. Even they defeat. This is happening in Delhi. This is happening in some other states of India.
It's an extraordinary story that the BJP party could seek and achieve an absolute majority in a country of over a billion people. Extraordinary. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more here. Don't go anywhere. You're watching and listening to Weekends with Jason Olborn here on TNT Radio.
I was such a young age. Everything changed. My name is Chloe. When I was 13, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. When I found out, I just didn't know how to react. I felt like everything was just kind of closing in on me. It just became a routine. Dad's doing chemo. I'd come home from school, wait for mum to finish work, and we'd go straight to the hospital, spend a few hours there, just draw. It was hard to navigate going to school. Hundreds of kids, and I was the only one with a dying dad. He was diagnosed in March, and then he died in October. Towards the end, I heard about Canteen. It kind of felt nice to know that they had other people like me. They understood what I was going through, and we didn't even have to chat about cancer. In 2020, I became a youth ambassador, so I can help others the way they helped me. I've done so many things since I was 13. I've graduated high school, university, gotten my license, made a move across the country. Life now is just a whole lot more fun. Please give a gift today to support more young people like me experiencing cancer.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost. The International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Discussing local, national, and international issues. Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
And welcome back to Weekends. We've just got some noise there. We'll just fix that up just now. Sorry, that is me at my end. I apologize for that. Things are just going crazy today as we're getting the latest information that's coming out of Sydney. Bondi Junction, there has been a stabbing attack. We're hearing reports now of 6 people have been killed in Bondi Junction, Westfield. The shopping center has been evacuated. News is coming through thick and fast, including a 9-month-old child baby is among the victims stabbed in this attack at Sydney's Westfield Bondi Junction. The baby and its mother were among at least 7 victims now of the stabbing attack that's unfolded across multiple floors of the busy shopping centre before 4 p.m. today. New South Wales Ambulance has confirmed 7 people have been taken to city's hospitals, including 1 child to the Royal Children's Hospital. NCA Newswire understands a man has been running around the busy shopping centre armed with a knife and stabbed 4 people before he was shot by police. Understood the only one offender was involved, though a major police operation still underway at the shopping centre. These are very, very disturbing scenes. We're also hearing reports of terror cells around the world being blamed. This is very, very disturbing as we're watching and listening what's going on, bringing the latest reports in. I trust that people will be tuning into TNT and, of course, looking around what's going on. So we're trying to bring you all the latest information. We're getting reports out of the UK as well. And, of course, the information that's happening today with Iran threatening Israel to attack, and of course reports from multiple countries, France, Germany, Israel, telling their US, telling citizens to get out of these particular countries, where to get out of Israel, to get out of Iran. Qantas has issued warnings previously that its flight from London to Perth is going to be rerouted via Singapore. It's getting in touch with its passengers. Clearly, what's going on now is getting everyone into a tailspin and a panic. And what we're trying to do is just bring things as quickly as we can, the information to the surface. But also, as you know, at TNT, we do things differently. We don't report just ad nauseum the same things over and over again. There is more behind the scenes of what is going on. And we're very lucky to have with us in this hour Manish Shah from TV9 in New Delhi. And whilst we got a very interesting report of what's going on there, because it's election season in India that takes place from the 19th of April all the way to the 4th of June. India, a democratic country, parliamentary democracy, a country that literally celebrates democracy in what's going on. But I know that Manish will be getting reports from his end, and it might be a little bit scratchy, and I apologise for what's going on. TNT coming into its own right now in the situation, and I trust that that you're enjoying the coverage, and it can be a little bit scratchy. Manish, just from what's happening now on the ground in India, is the Indian government issuing reports for its people in Israel to take cover, to take care, to get out? What's the latest coming from the Indian government?
Yeah, a few hours back, the government of India issued an advisory for the people of India that please don't visit Israel or Iran, both country right now, because the situation is not good. At the same time, the government of India has appealed from the people who are in Israel and Iran. As I mentioned with you, that more than around 20,000 Indian people right now in Israel, and few thousands in Iran. So the government of India has appealed to them also to be in touch with the Indian embassy. And obviously, it's a matter of concern for the government, at the same time for the people also, because it's not only a matter for the safety of the Indian people. End of the day, if war happens, obviously, other than destructions and then whatever will be happen, this entire supply chain will be disturbed. And India is very much dependent on the oil and some other things for import. India is importing lots of things from the various country. So this is really a very, very much concern for all of us.
You know, it's a great privilege to have you on the show, and I know how busy things are for you in election season. right now, and the fact that you've explained very clearly for us here in Australia and around the West, our audience obviously predominantly English speaking around the world, but to explain how much India is a peace loving country that respects real democracy right now, and even if people aren't necessarily a fan of Modi, the Prime Minister, and mainly because of the fact that in many ways Prime Minister Modi's had to play both sides of the fence. I mean, he's had to cuddle up to the United States and Joe Biden at the same time as he is the original founding five nations of the BRICS organization: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. So he's a man whose job it is to be able to create peace and at the same time influence the United Nations Security Council to become a permanent member. And as he should, I mean, India is now what, more than 15 or 16% of the entire world's population, and a technological hub, the Earth's emerging factory, if you will, as China falls out of favor. The role of India at this stage is immense. And the most important thing to be the world's largest democracy is to be able to get it right and to lead. And this is the point of your country now. You play such an important role. And we're all looking to India for how it will lead by example, because effectively you've become world leaders by default, simply by size and place and not wanting to be involved in conflict. You must be very proud, but at the same time realizing an enormous responsibility falling on India, on her shoulders.
Yeah, thank you so much for such a kind word. You know, you are really very generous. And yes, of course, you know, I'm really proud to be an Indian. I'm really proud to be an Indian journalist. I always used to say that, you know, because I was Indian journalist, that's why I could return from the war zone. Otherwise, nowadays, not any other journalist from any country can go to war zone from both sides, and then he can say that, okay, I'm from so and so country, and either you are friend or enemy. But India is the only country who can say that I am only friend of yours, and at the same time, your opposite side. And this is happening. See, if you see the history of Indian diplomacy, earlier we used to follow the non-aligned movement. Like we were not with anyone else. But right now, the government of India is saying that we have all alignment. Like, we are from both sides. We are talking about peace. We are talking about progress. We are talking that each and every conflict should be end up through the diplomacy, through the dialogue, not through the war. And you see, if you see the Indian culture, we have the Buddhism, Jainism, each and every religion. We used to say about that end of the day, the peace is the only thing, and through peace only the humanity can survive. So India is continuously advocating for peace. And that's why when this regional conflict is going to start, then India has appealed to both sides. If you see that in Indian Foreign Ministry issued an advisory on 4th of April, and then few hours back to restrain Indian people not to visit Israel and Iran. At the same time, India has requested to both sides to find a solution through dialogue. But I don't think that this is going to happen right now, as I mentioned with you, and as a journalist who is continuously following this development. This war is imminent, because this war is not decided by the parties. This war is decided by someone else. This war is decided by the military-industrial complex. This war is decided by those governments who are actually, you know, doing conspiracy with military-industrial complex, and they are deciding that, okay, let's do some other war. For them, it's like a match. It's like one another match, and they are just minting their money, either it is a dollar or it is in some other currency. God knows. But end of the day, we have to pay the price. Everyone have to pay the price. And you know, Jason, don't think that I am sitting in New Delhi, you are sitting in Australia, and you and me will not be affected. Each and every person will be affected because of this decision. So we all have to do something at our part so that this regional war should not happen. if it happens, then we can just pray to the God.
Yeah, this is exactly right. Now, I just got to give our viewers and listeners a further update out of the attacks at Bondi Junction in Sydney that it's emerging as we speak. A press conference is planned regarding the attacks in Bondi Junction today at Westfield. We've now learnt that it looks like 8 people, including 1 child, have been taken to hospital. 6 people are dead, and police have shot a man, would you believe it, wearing an Australian rugby jersey, while speculation, would you believe, now coming out of the United Kingdom that perhaps even there could be some terrorist cells operating. I don't want to inflame the situation anymore, but we must put things on the table. We're not afraid to ask the questions here at TNT Radio, and it's very important, but at the same time, we must present facts as they come to us. It's incredibly important that we do that. This is what it's all about here. But the main thing is we're breaking news for you at the same time. We're joined by, as we've always said, credible journalists and capable presenters from around the world. And we're very, very privileged to have Manish Jha here from TV9 as we speak at the moment and filling in the gaps around the world as his country is facing a massive election at a time where Manish has accurately predicted the conflicts that were coming out. And it's unbelievable that it's happening right now. This is just how it works in the news business. But trying to explain what's going on here in a country that loves peace, that is literally forced to play both sides of the fence in terms of the West and in terms of being part of the BRICS nations at the exact same time. And as well, I'm just looking at the clock here as we're running out of time on my show today, and working Alex should be coming up shortly after. But the purpose now is to get all the news that we can. Manish, looking forward, what's coming, and if the BJP party is predicting an absolute majority in the upcoming elections, this solidifies Modi's term as one of the most stable, you might say, prime ministers in the country's history. Its role in the BRICS group of nations going forward, do you see BRICS as a dominating force, perhaps in a changing multipolar world that's moving away from the United States as being the single superpower? How is that going to play out in what you're seeing going forward?
You know, the role of BRICS is going to be very, very, very important for the next few years. And especially this year, the BRICS summit is going to be held in Russia. I'm also planning to go there again for the news coverage. I had privilege to attend BRICS summit in some other country, like in China and Brazil also. But this year is totally different because lots of new members will be the part of the BRICS. And at the same time, basically, Russia and some other BRICS members country are trying to give a message to the West that, you know, if you have a NATO, if you have some other groups and who are continuously planning and advocating for the war, then we have to think about some alternate option. See, as far as India is concerned, India is a proud member of BRICS. At the same time, India is a proud member of Quad also. In that group, we are, India is with United States, Japan, Australia, and India is a member of Quad. But the role of BRICS, if you see right now, what is happening other than these 5 countries, the new five more countries are the member of the BRICS. At the same time, more than 50 countries are also seeking membership of this organization. Why this is happening? Because it means that more than 50-60 countries are thinking that the way world was moving under the leadership of West, this is not going to work. So we have to see the alternate option. And why it is happening? Because we see after the pandemic that how those countries behave. Suddenly the war has started, and at the end of the day, the supply chain is totally disturbed, and still the West is expecting that our agenda should be on priority. I'm sorry, but this is not going to happen, because end of the day, government of India is responsible for more than 1.5, 1.4 billion people. And this is with the this is the same with some other country also. So just imagine that more than 4-5 billion people are only watching the hidden and very malicious agenda by few government and the military industrial complex. So this is why the people are seeking some alternative option, and BRICS is, I think, one of them.
It's exciting, isn't it, to think that again the infrastructure is starting to be built in this process through this organisation that wants to minimise the infrastructure, if you will. I mean, the BRICS setup is there's no platform as such. It's a big platform, well, a big organization of cooperation, and that's the part of what's going on here. And at the same time, it provides that a country can keep its own identity, its own sovereignty, but be a part of a big group, which is a threat to the globalist plan. One would see through this whole COVID situation that's going on here, which is all about compliance and WHO, pandemic treaties, etc. And this is very disturbing. We've only got a couple of minutes left, Manish, and I just wanted to ask you, and this is just a philosophical question. You can't possibly have the facts to answer it correctly, but if India was to face a pandemic like it did during COVID, do you think the Indian people would be as compliant as they were 4 years ago going into it, or have they become a lot more skeptical and mistrusting of major institutions around the world?
Yeah, definitely. You know, actually, this is a concern for all of us, especially lots of rumors, basically we all are witnessing that what is happening, lots of heart attack we are seeing in India also. The lots of young people are dying, and lots of experts are saying that it may be because of the vaccine. God knows, we are not sure, but yes, we have apprehension. So I don't think that in the near future, if something kind of some pandemic kind is happen, will come, what will be the response of Indian people? But yes, we are not going to trust blindly to the Western countries or the international organization, because do you remember that when the WHO was saying that China has no role, China has not done anything wrong, and then at least the people of India is not going to believe even this time the WHO also. And the major pharma companies, because we have a doubt that what the kind of vaccines they had. Thank God that India had their own two vaccines, but God knows what is the impact of those vaccines, because even I can say you, because one of my family members is also affected, although the doctor is not saying officially, but we have apprehension that, it might be because of the vaccine. Yeah.
This is what's so disturbing, isn't it? That it doesn't matter what part of the world you're from, when you rush a vaccine in the middle of a pandemic using experimental technology, and there was different technologies here in the West, though. We had mRNA technology thrust upon the mass population. We were told that it was safe and effective. And now when people are suffering one way or another through long COVID or through various obvious side effects or increased rates of cancer, 16 to 20% excess death rate, one has to ask the questions. And when those that pushed it as hard as they did are now facing the music and realizing that that's not really what's going on, we're now seeing the dishonesty and the distrust, and it's obvious that the people are the ones in the middle and paying a very heavy price and should act accordingly when they can. Now, we have reached the end of our time and the end of this show. Manish, I want to thank you for your brilliant work that you
do. Thank you so much.
for taking the time with us today, and I'd love to be able to have you back on soon as the elections continue to bring the latest reports. Wonderful service that you provide for us here, and of course for the people home in India. We're going to take the break, and coming up next, Alex will be up with the technology show. Don't go anywhere, and we'll try and bring you updates as we can throughout the evening if there are more developments out of Bondi, and of course what's happening in Israel. TNT is making a splash, and we do things differently here. Very proud of the work we're doing, and very proud of our audience for sticking with us and supporting us and sharing and doing what you do best, which is helping us to do what we do best. I'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for watching. This is Jason Olborn signing off now for Weekends here on TNT.